Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with John Rubino. He is the editor over at the Dollar Collapse website. And John, I want to take a little step back from the day-to-day moves in these markets and focus more on monetary policy. Now, we've talked a lot this year about monetary policy and how central banks and governments have really just had to open up the floodgates. And that's one thing that a lot of the gold bugs bank on. And it's also something that we do need to note is that there has been a massive injection of capital into the markets, into the world broadly. And some of that has landed in individuals' back pockets, but it's a very different world this year. And that monetary policy much more spread out than what we saw, say, pre-pandemic. But that's also something that I think we need to balance here is that as we're getting better vaccine news and confidence that we could get back to some sort of normal, pre-pandemic normal, that's encouraging. But it has some people saying, well, then what does monetary policy look like? Quite frankly, we were already in an easy monetary system, easy monetary policy before the pandemic. It just really ramped up after the fact. So how are you balancing out the monetary policy that we have currently and what could change? What could happen if we do get back to a little bit more of a normal?
Hey, Corey. Well, you know, people forget that back in 2018 and 2019, we had already come to the conclusion that easy money was going to be with us for basically forever, because as soon as any government and any central bank tried to tighten monetary policy, their financial markets would throw a fit. You know, stocks would tank and bonds would start acting crazy. And it was looking very threatening because a dramatic equities bear market is a systemic threat now. So the central banks of the world and the central governments of the world were having to cave whenever that happened. And basically the idea had taken hold that we were never going to be able to raise interest rates again. We were never going to be able to tighten monetary policy. We were never going to be able to scale back the massive deficits that governments were running. So when the pandemic came along, all it did was accelerate that process. Now, even if, let's say, the vaccines that are coming out now work beautifully with no side effects and governments are competent enough to roll out hundreds of millions of doses and people are docile enough to actually accept, you know, those doses, and it all works, and we go back to 2019, basically, that is still a situation in which we're going to have easy money as far as the eye can see. Only we've loaded up on debt in the intervening year. You know, we took on probably an extra $10 or $15 trillion globally in order to bail everybody out during the pandemic. So we're in even worse shape than we were back in 2019, when we were already in very bad shape from the point of view of monetary policy, because monetary policy is only an effective tool for managing an economy if it works both ways. If you can raise rates when you need to and lower rates when you need to, or shrink the money supply when you have to, or increase the money supply. If the only side of that you have is ever lower interest rates and ever greater money creation, then you're on kind of a one-way street towards hyperinflation. And we were there before, but now we're much further down that street because of all this extra debt that we've got to cover with even more currency creation. So I think it's possible that, as crazy as this pandemic seems to us right now, that historians might look back on it as just a little blip in a much bigger, much more dangerous trend, you know, as we, you know, progressively weakened our financial systems until they just collapse. And so it could be that 2021 is a big decision year that kind of determines how this plays out, because at least in the U.S., even if the vaccine works, you know, it's a year before things go back to normal. And we've got most restaurants on the verge of bankruptcy, most hotels on the verge of bankruptcy. You know, New York City hotel occupancy rates are like 10% right now. You know, the cruise line companies, the airlines, and, you know, name 20 other industries, and most of them are probably on the verge of mass bankruptcies. these guys aren't going to be able to wait a year. Their cash flow is so dramatically negative right now. Oh, and state and local governments in the U.S. Have such horrendously underfunded pension plans that they're going bankrupt too. We're not sure how states go bankrupt. You know, the legal rules for that aren't well understood, because it's not clear states are even allowed to go bankrupt, but they can default and they will default. So anyhow, all of that is going to happen if we don't bail these guys out. So it looks like we may have to do what we were going to do anyhow. Even if the pandemic was going to continue, we were going to have to bail out everybody in sight. And even with a vaccine that fixes it a year hence, we might still have to bail out huge numbers of industries and municipalities and states. Which means, okay, $15 trillion in 2020, extra debt taken on, maybe the same amount in 2021, which means we're way down that road towards currency crisis. And 2021 might be the year in which everybody kind of realizes that.
Yeah, we'll see, John. But in all fairness, I've heard that almost fear prior years, over the last 10 years, even more than that, right? People are worried about the monetary policy and they're worried about collapses in the financial system, but I still believe what matters is that every central bank seems to be reading off the same playbook, right? And this wasn't just a one country issue. This really spread around the world with the increase in monetary policy. But when it comes to the markets, they depend on easy monetary policies and arguably monetary policies that just keep on getting easier. So do you think is maybe some of the governments wind back some of their easy money policies if we do start to get back to some sort of normal or at least open stuff up again? Does that cause some short-term weakness in markets that then we can carry that over to say that central banks would then react and get even easier because markets would be trending downwards?
Well, yeah, that's the game that we were playing before the pandemic hit. So let's say the Fed in the U.S., although, as you point out, everybody's doing it, but just taking the Fed as an example, they would try to shrink their balance sheet. In other words, lower the amount of currency that they had pumped into the system in years past. And then the stock market would tank, and the Fed would take it back and say, oh, sorry, we didn't mean that really. We're going to cut interest rates more and we'll stand by to give you all the liquidity you need. And then the stock market would go back up. So we're there again. And going forward, it's going to be the same game. Anytime any government tries to start scaling back deficit spending or shrinking the central bank balance sheet or otherwise shrinking the money supply, the financial markets, which are priced for better than perfection right now. You know, the U.S. stock market, generally speaking, is more richly valued than it was at the peak of the previous two bubbles, when we had horrendous stock market crashes after that. As soon as any government tries to scale back, the stock market will tank, the government will cave, and we'll get even easier money. So we're going to do this as many times as it takes. Until people realize that that's the game, or until it just doesn't work anymore. You know, there are valuation levels that stocks probably can't go to and still be attractive to really anybody other than central banks. And there are interest rates, but we don't know what the lowest possible interest rate is yet, because we used to think it was zero, and now it turned out we can get past zero and still function. So, there's a thing called the effective lower bound, where we can't push interest rates down below that level before it starts causing all kinds of trouble in the financial markets. Well, we'll test that limit too pretty soon. So all of that is coming. As you pointed out, it has looked like it was impossible to keep going pretty much all the way through the past decade. You know, it just didn't look possible to do what we were doing. And yet we did it, and we got away with it kind of, sort of. But, you know, in life, lots of things go on further than you think. You know, you get away with stuff longer than you ought to be able to when you're behaving badly. This is one of those things where even though we got away with it longer than we expected, or than some people expected, it's not infinite. You know, you can't keep going this way forever. And basically what we've done in the last year and what we'll do next year is we'll move the point at which we can't go in this direction any further much closer. So sooner or later, it blows up on us. But we just made that day a lot more imminent.
Well, that's kind of worrisome in itself there, John. But let's also talk about what all this easy money policies or all this easy money into the markets should result in. And that is some sort of form of inflation. I've heard a lot. I even talked a lot about that potential on this weekend show, where it came to, if the economy starts to get back to normal, then people will go out and spend whatever money they have or whatever they can make at that current time. And that could lead to a real spike in inflation. This is also something that we've talked about for years on years, saying, well, is inflation coming? Inflation should be coming. Still hasn't really perked its ugly head when it comes to hyperinflation. I know we could point to other aspects of daily life where we have seen inflation, but a lot of the inflation has landed in the financial markets. Do you see that changing as we progress, hopefully, out of this pandemic?
Yeah, we have had raging inflation, but it's been limited to stocks and bonds and real estate mostly, with healthcare and college tuition thrown in. But whether it spreads to other things remains to be seen, because we have a lot of excess productive capacity in China and elsewhere around the world, where they can make cheap stuff forever for next to nothing. And so there's no way the price of those things goes up, as long as you've got all these factories churning it out there. But it's possible that price increases spread to things that people use in their everyday lives, and in that way makes them notice that there's inflation. Because right now, you know, you don't look at the stock market going up and thinking, oh no, that means the dollar went down versus stocks. You just think, cool, my stocks are going up. But when medicine that you buy in the drugstore goes way up, and the food that you buy in the grocery store goes way up, and those things start becoming noticeable to you, then that leads to a broader based change in market psychology, because all of a sudden everybody thinks there's inflation. And that's when things get really interesting. But in the meantime, this is a great environment for gold and silver and the mining stocks, because if governments are locked into easy money, which they really are, even though they'll try to get out of it every once in a while, they're going to fail. That's a great environment for precious metals, because that means that the price of financial assets will be elevated most of the time. And a lot of that money will slosh over into precious metals, which are seen as safe havens in case of financial instability. So I think that the kind of world that we're creating right now leads to almost an impossibility to predict the upper limit for precious metals, because, if the dollar goes to zero, gold goes to infinity. So I'm not saying the dollar will go to zero, but that's the spectrum that we're on right now. And the further currencies fall in value, the higher precious metals prices will go, because they're kind of the reciprocal of fiat currencies. And the mining stocks tend to move in a more dramatic way than the underlying metals. So you see the mining stocks go up even more. And that's the kind of world that we've created. The timing is obviously questionable, but it doesn't seem like we can avoid that kind of a scenario. And so, the happy part of this story is that you can make a lot of money in precious metals going forward.
Well, there you go, John. One thing to note, though, is that recently the moves in the precious metal stocks have very much gone hand in hand with moves in U.S. equity markets. And that's still where a lot of the focus is, right? How are these markets reacting to all this news, and especially all this vaccine news, which now seems to be dominating money flows? John, thanks for your time today. Always great chatting with you, buddy. I will post a link to your website below, and we will chat again in 2 weeks. Thanks, John. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, Corey. See ya.